Hi, my name is Dave Page, and welcome to another podcast for the PCRF podcast series. I'm here with
Dr. Keith Wesley. I'm the medical director for Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Marshall Washick, paramedic with Health East Medical Transportation.
Dr. Aaron Burnett, I'm an emergency medicine physician and a pre-hospital medicine fellow with Regents Hospital.
And we are going to talk about scoop stretchers today. We're reviewing an article, a study by Dr. Del Rossi. I hope I'm pronouncing that well enough. Are scoop stretchers suitable for use on spine-injured patients? And Marshall, do you want to tell us a little bit about Del Rossi et al., what they were looking at?
Yeah, the the objective of the study was really to evaluate the effectiveness of scoop stretchers compared to the use of the long backboard using the two basic techniques for boarding a patient, the lift and slide and the log roll. What the investigators, Del Rossi and all, et al., used was three-dimensional angular motion sensors and imaging to compare movement in the cervical spine of cadaver patients. And they found some interesting stuff. Though it wasn't statistically significant, they did say that it was pretty relevant, that the scoop stretcher actually worked better at reducing the amount of movement in the cervical spine as compared to log roll techniques and the lift and slide.
So they looked at five cadaver patients. They dissected their anterior anatomy so that they would be able to fracture their spines. And they looked specifically at C5 through C7, C5 through C6, excuse me, and moved them from I'm assuming some sort of a position, we don't know if it was on the floor or not, onto another surface using either the scoop, the log roll, or the slide and lift. And it's a study done by the people doing the lifting were three physicians and two athletic trainers. They controlled for some of the variables by having at least four people doing the lift, and in some cases where they needed, they had five, right? So our scoops back in. Let's talk about this. I still remember freezing my hands on those metal things, but they're very clear about these are the new scoop stretchers, and they are talking about a different device than what us old dogs remember in terms of pinching your fingers and no support for the head. These new ones do have support for the head. So
yeah, these are those nice molded PVC, you know, the whatever plastic ones that we see at the trade shows now and in the magazines. And what's interesting, one other arm of this study was that they were using cadavers, but then they repeated the entire procedure of log rolling, lift, slide, and scoop by taking the cadavers and creating surgically unstable spinal injuries by cutting the spinal ligaments. And the limitation of the study is that with so many different arms, they lost their statistical significance.
Yeah.
But yet, when
and
you
five cadavers,
right?
I mean,
five
that's
cadavers
it.
With
and they
three
knew
different
that, to be fair.
Motions, yeah. And then under two different conditions. So that really they lost their statistical significance there. But yet, when you look, there's a difference between statistical significance and clinical significance. And when you look at the graphs of the amount of angular motion around the cervical spine, particularly in the cadavers who had an unstable injury inflicted on them, there appears to be clinically significant increase in both distraction, which is pulling on the head, and rotational motion around the spine when the cadavers were essentially longboarded in the traditional manner with the log roll to check their back to see if there's a knife sticking out, and then the lift and slide, which is the standard DOT training that we've always done. Versus
yeah.
Just using the scoop and encapsulating the supine cadaver.
And you bring up a great point, which is the thing that struck me the most out of this piece was, gosh, we do log rolls all the time. And I don't think I've ever heard that a log roll is a bad thing and that it moves the spine around. And here are multiple references about how that log roll is very complex. The angles in which people's spines and heads turn and the choreography of that ends up being very, very bad. And so,
well, and how many of us remember our national registry and trying to remember, okay, now which way do I hold my hand so if the patient's on their front or on their back so that when we log roll them, I'm not twisting their head backwards.
Right.
You know, that was like the most psychometric, intensive portion of the National Registry.
And you got to ask yourself, you know, who's doing this log roll? You got three orthopedic surgeons who probably don't do this on a regular basis.
Right.
I would have loved to have seen them put in IVs. We probably would have found out that IVs don't work too.
Yeah. But they did practice. They said they'd practice. So I also thought, what would happen if we did this on EMTs and paramedics who were just coming in on it cold and just had to do a procedure they're supposed to know how to do?
I'm going to dispel that because just this past 6 months there was the study that came out of Houston where they used Houston firefighter paramedic putting cervical collars on surgically unstable C-spine cadavers and found significant cervical distraction. And these are, you know, nationally registered paramedics. So
I'm
not sure if being an EMT or a paramedic makes you any better
I agree. I think
at doing this
for pre-hospital relevance, the thought of doing it with EMTs and paramedics and the thought of doing it with people who are supposed to know the skill before they go in and do a training and do a practice session, that to me speaks volumes about whether or not it actually has clinical significance or not. I think it really puts us in the realm of goodness, log rolls are out. That's what I think the take home message from this thing.
I thought about that too. And the issue, you have a patient, you got to log roll them and see if they've got a knife sticking out of their back. And how many times when you log roll a patient, do you actually find anything that makes a difference? But Marshall actually had a better point when we were reviewing this.
Okay. So how often are we actually putting a patient on a long backboard or scoop stretcher or whatever who's in the perfect supine position?
That's a good
Rarely.
Point.
Mostly car wrecks or it's fall and, you know, they're in these pretzeled positions. And you have to move them anyways. So, what difference does it make? That's my question.
And I think Marshall brings up a great point there, is these patients are very rarely having an isolated cervical spine injury, maybe with the exception of a diving accident when you got to get them out of the water anyway. Most patients with these injuries are polytrauma, high mechanism of injury with the risk for having a lot of other life-threatening injuries. And so, you know, Marshall, you do this every day. I mean, what do you think the time factor is going to be for you to extricate somebody and get them out of a scene if you're using one of these scoop stretchers as opposed to just log rolling?
Well, I don't know. I can't really say. I've never used a scoop stretcher. But I would probably use a scoop stretcher very much like a long backboard and rapidly extricate a patient.
Yeah, I'd have to say the application of the scoop stretcher seems to me actually easier than a long spine board and better for the patient. They're molded in a way that allows the spine not to have to be compressed. What I did wonder is, you know, the scoop stretcher bouncing down the road and having the center part of that scoop be hollowed out, you know, whether or not an unstable fracture is actually going to suffer. But you know, in the ER, you guys put patients on a bed with a mattress. So forget the hard spine board. They're on a mattress.
And I think that's true. The number of transitions you have between the scene to the ambulance, from the ambulance to the ER bed, at least three or four. Once we get them in the department, we still move them from the bed to the CT scanner. So I think that's an excellent point. Pushing the polytrauma angle that I was speaking about before, I'm pretty uncomfortable if we're not looking at the back of these patients. If you think of your rule of nines, that's 20% of the body surface area. And like Dr. Wesley pointed out, you miss a penetrating injury in the back, you miss a life-threatening injury. And
that's a good point.
You save that C-spine, but that heart stops beating. You haven't made a whole lot of progress.
I was taking the exact opposite of perspective, and that is I have never found anything on the patient's back in the field that makes a difference of what I'm going to do between there and the ER. Because you guys are going to roll them anyway. And if it's bleeding, them laying on it will help it stop.
Interesting.
If they got a sucking chest wound, well, they're sealing it by laying on it.
Goodness.
So, but if any budding researchers out here really want to take this information, the question is, you know, the question is, can you adequately spinal, and I don't even like the term spinal immobilization because we don't immobilize anything. We motion restrict because unless we put them in a total body bubble vacuum bag, they still move. So the question is, if you were to take these cadavers, put them on the board versus the scoop, and then put them through the gymnastics of moving them out of the car, out of the ditch, into the rig, onto the helicopter, and all the other bumps and bruises that we inflict on them en route to the trauma center, is there any significant difference in the amount of motion, cervical motion, between the scoop and the longboard?
Yeah.
That's really the issue, because I think we've all agreed that, one, the patients who have sustained cervical spinal injury are the polytrauma patients. They've already sustained the injury before we get there. And does any of that motion that we inflict with any of these extrication and immobilization processes actually worsens the existing injury? And is there anything that we can even do about it, knowing that you got the motorcycle meet on the road, he's going to have his heels behind his head. We still got to move him around. We've got to put him in some kind of a linear position, whether it's supine, prone, or on the board or on the scoop.
And to be fair, the authors of this study were not comparing scoops versus backboards.
Correct.
That I think you're right that researchers out there that are listening to this should. And non-researchers should think, how could I design something, some sort of a study that really looks at this pre-hospitally would be ideal. And I still want to congratulate this group. They obviously controlled for a lot of different variables and did mention in here the use of the C-collar did restrict a little bit of the cervical motion. I think the number of, they were very restrictive in terms of just looking at C5, C6 and not just injuries anywhere else. And so they were very specific about it's a supine patient and we're comparing movement without a device to movement with a device. And the only device they looked at was scoop. So I also neglected to mention this was published in the Journal of the American Journal of Emergency Medicine. In case you're looking for it as well, and the references on the website. Any parting take-home thoughts other than maybe we should relook at the scoop stretcher again?
I think we need to relook, like Dr. Resley said, at all of our immobilization techniques. This is an area where we're clearly not where we want to be, and a lot more studies need to be done. We're doing the best we can with the research and the information we have now, but this is an area of pre-hospital care that we really have a long way to go to add to our knowledge, to find better ways to do things, to really improve the care we give to our patients.
And on that note, we'll thank our sponsors and technical editors, FISDAP, and have a great day.